Tentor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Miss Weston's Wager by Ashton Newbold, narrated by Catherine Anderson. Chapter 1. Brighton, England, Autumn 1814. Of all the things Harriet Weston enjoyed, sketching lilacs proved the most difficult. The petals, much smaller than that of the average flower, possessed intricate lines and varying shades of violet. Not only were the petals small, but there was also an abundance of them, surrounding the stem in quantity she could scarcely comprehend. Making the endeavour of sketching them even more difficult was the sad fact that there were no lilacs to be found on the Weston property, not now that autumn had come. The lilac was also Harriet's favourite flower. The colour reminded her of joy and love, of riches and serenity. She scrunched her brow as she positioned her pencil over her sketchbook, closing her eyes as she struggled to recall the image of a lilac in her mind. She stared at the bare bush with intensity, willing a beautiful flower with pale violet petals to appear. She regretted not finishing her drawing during the summer months when the bushes had been in full bloom. She regretted many things of late. She dropped her pencil with frustration when her hand failed her, shaking too much to create the perfect line. Drawing usually calmed her, but Harriet found that nothing could calm her in recent months, not with the impending return of Mr. William Harrison to Brighton. Never had a man inflicted such ill-ease upon her like William did. It was not that he was an unpleasant man. In fact, no one seemed to be able to find a single fault in him, especially Harriet's sister Grace. And that was where the problem had begun. Just months before, Grace had been prattling on about her nonsensical belief that she was an expert in love, with no real experience to support such a statement. She had suggested for the 100th time, it seemed, that Harriet court their childhood friend, Mr. William Harrison. After much discussion, a wager had been struck between sisters, one that Harriet had quickly lost. If Grace could prove her expertise by gaining a proposal from the man of Harriet's choosing, then Harriet would agree to encourage William to court her. Harriet had deemed her own victory a sure thing, but she had been sadly mistaken. Grace did indeed gain a proposal, and a marriage too, and now Harriet was forced to fulfil her end of the bargain. The moment William returned to Brighton, she was required to encourage him into a courtship. If he did indeed pursue a courtship with her, she was required to endure 3 meetings with him before she could decline his attention. The very idea set her palms sweating and her heart racing like a spooked horse. Since the wager had been struck, Harriet had been considering every possible way out of it. Unfortunately, her sister was one of the most stubborn women of the county, with an unwavering opinion. Grace would never rest until her sister became Harriet Harrison, a name which Harriet shuddered at the thought of. Society, of course, would know her as simply Mrs. William Harrison. She cringed. Could there ever be a more boring name than that? Her friend, Rose Daventry, was soon to become Lady Goldsmith, wed to Sir Martin Goldsmith. Harriet longed for the excitement of such a lovely name. It seemed her life was destined to be like the dying lilacs on the bush before her, uninteresting, dull, and mediocre. Of course, she would never become Mrs. William Harrison. What Grace did not understand was that years ago, Harriet had given William every reason to avoid her forever. He would likely despise her now. Although Harriet missed her sister, she was quite glad that Grace was away with her husband, visiting his cousins in the north of England, far enough away that she could not scold Harriet for putting off the wager. Harriet could avoid William a little longer. As she mused over these things, she set her pencil to her paper once more, the tip nearly breaking under the weight of her distress. At least William was not set to arrive for 2 weeks. 2 weeks in which Harriet could enjoy her freedom. The man never failed to bring a stirring to her stomach, a mix of emotions she didn't dare puzzle out. They attended the same social events when propriety required it, and she knew he tried just as hard as she did to avoid meeting eyes, being seated near one another, or, heaven forbid, engaging in a conversation. She had spent years trying to forget her childhood memories that involved him. And there were many. After several minutes, Harriet outlined the final details of the largest lilac on her page, closing her sketchbook with a snap. She examined the position of the sun, judging the time to be approximately 9. She missed the morning she had spent with Grace, sketching while her sister read books beneath trees on their property. But Grace was now married, receiving the lovely name of Lady Coventry, leaving Harriet to enjoy the company of the other unattached females of Brighton. But Harriet's favourite female companion, Rose Daventry, was soon to abandon her as well to the marriage noose. They could still enjoy their morning walks together, but Rose would have the responsibility of running a household, leaving little time for her unmarried friends. With a sigh, Harriet stood from her place on the garden bench, smoothing her skirts as she walked to the back door of Weston Manor. After she had replaced her sketchbook atop her writing desk and tied her favourite straw bonnet, she stepped outside to find Rose awaiting her. Endowed with a tall and willowy figure, golden curls, and a glowing complexion, it was no surprise that Rose had made such a lovely match with Sir Martin. Harriet met her friend with a smile. "I am in great need of a walk this morning," she said, forcing her voice to be cheerful. "Exertion is the only thing I have found capable of clearing my mind." Rose gave her a warm smile in return. "I do enjoy our morning walks. You are the only friend I have that doesn't tire of my talk of wedding preparations." She gave a trilling laugh, as if the contrary were impossible. For the sake of her friend, Harriet didn't outwardly deny the words, though she could think of a long list of topics that would be of greater interest to her than Rose's perfect marriage. But she was happy for her friend. She truly was. As Harriet descended the front steps, she held her skirts high, buried beneath her cloak, hoping to draw attention to them. The result was as she had hoped. Rose gasped in delight, placing one hand over her full lips. "Oh, Harriet! Is this the gown you spoke of last week?" She nodded with vigour. It was the first day she had worn the gown. After spending weeks constructing it, she had been eager to finally wear it. "I found the fabric in town and simply could not resist it. The construction was difficult, but Mama assisted me in the intricacies. I used an old dress to structure the pieces, then added the embellishments you see here." Harriet shrugged out of her cloak and pointed at the layer of chiffon on the sleeves and the overlay of lace covering most of the lavender skirts. With honey-blonde curls and pale blue eyes, Harriet had concluded that the gentle lavender colour would suit her complexion quite nicely. Her mother had wholeheartedly agreed. Rose stepped closer to examine the gown. "It is the most exquisite thing I've ever seen you wear," she said in a voice of delight. "It flatters your figure most becomingly. Mr. Harrison will be very pleased with it, I dare say." Harriet's elation dropped at the mention of William. "I do not wear it with the intention to please him." She had confided in Rose concerning the consequences of her wager with Grace. She hadn't guessed her friend would be so quick to agree with her sister on the perfection of the match. "It does not matter whether you intend to please him or not." Rose swatted a hand through the air. "He will be pleased without your permission. I have always wished you two would marry. I could scarcely imagine a better match for you than William." Rose's expression brightened. "You must keep me informed with all the details of your courtship." Harriet sighed. "You will be sorely disappointed. All I am required is 3 meetings. After they have passed, I am allowed to give up the endeavour." "And break poor William's heart? You are not the sort of woman to do that." A surge of guilt pulsed in Harriet's chest. "This courtship is not even likely to happen." She willed herself not to appear ruffled. "William and I have known one another for our entire lives. We have been at many of the same dances and dinner parties, and he has never given me attention beyond the expected polite greeting. Not a word has passed between us since our childhood, and hardly a glance. If he wished to pursue me, he would have done so by now." A sneaking sensation of ache touched her heart. She was entirely to blame for the distance that had grown between herself and William. Rose lifted her eyes heavenward, pursing her lips. "Oh, Harriet, he has adored you since we were children, but he was also the ear to which you cast all your dreams of marrying a man of nobility. I believe his lack of pursuit signifies the goodness of his character." Harriet scowled. "How so?" "He knows that to marry you, he would be robbing you of your dream, and he would never do that. He cares for you far too much." Harriet wished she hadn't asked for clarification. She remembered the days Rose spoke of, the days she had spent countless hours with Rose and Grace on the beach near the Daventry home. William, just 2 years her senior, had often accompanied the girls, taking part in their games of imagination as they searched the sand for hidden treasures. "Where shall we walk today?" Harriet asked abruptly, troubled by the direction of the conversation. "It has been days since we took the path leading through the woods." After her recent thoughts, Harriet did not feel inclined to see the beach. "The woods sound like just the thing," Rose said. "The birds are very musical at this time of day. We are sure to find a greater abundance among the trees than along the beach, and we may enjoy the changing colours of the leaves." Harriet nodded her agreement, linking her arm through Rose's as they set off toward the woods. The morning air carried the scent of moisture and vegetation, and the sun had only recently finished its ascent above the coastline. Rose immediately began speaking of the numerous details of her wedding, details which she had already given Harriet on multiple occasions. As they entered the cover of the woods, Harriet found her thoughts travelling elsewhere, but made sure to offer the periodic "I see," or "How wonderful," to keep her friend appeased. She studied the broad trunks, the sturdy and mottled wood of the trees, noting her preference to the woods over the ocean. Trees were predictable and strong, unyielding to their surroundings. In contrast, the ocean turned to and fro as the wind demanded, tossing the water in unforgiving waves. Harriet had once preferred the ocean, as it inspired her childhood imagination. But as she had grown and matured, she had become rigid and unimaginative, like the trees.
"Did you hear what I said?"
Rose's voice broke through her thoughts as they approached a fallen tree at the start of a clearing. Harriet looked up at her friend's partially raised brow.
"I'm afraid I must have missed it."
Rose sighed, but instead of appearing disappointed in Harriet, her lips pursed in a mischievous smirk.
"You were thinking of William again, weren't you?"
"I'm sorry to disappoint you, but no, I was not." Harriet placed a finger between her neck and bonnet ribbons, feeling hot despite the cool air. Prancing forward through a patch of fallen leaves, Rose spun around to face her.
"Do you remember when we pretended we were pirates in search of treasure? William was the captain, you were the quartermaster, I was the cooper, and Grace was the carpenter."
Rose fell into a fit of giggles.
"Grace demanded that she be the quartermaster instead, but you refused to abandon the role. You two had many quarrels over that."
Harriet scolded her lips for smiling, pulling her mouth back into a firm line.
"How ridiculous we all were."
Rose stopped, one eyebrow raised.
"Ridiculous? It was your idea."
"And what a ridiculous idea it was." Harriet pulled her cloak tightly around herself, hoping her expression conveyed passiveness and not the memories that haunted her.
"Our days would have been better spent within doors, practising our instruments, stitching, and French."
Rose gaped at her in a most unladylike fashion.
"Do you not look upon those days as the most thrilling of your life? Being a child is an opportunity that never comes again. When a person is grown, they are censored for overuse of their imagination. But as a child, it is encouraged. Harriet did not feel inclined to explain to Rose why she looked at those days with regret. She had every reason to. It was an enjoyable time, I will confess, but I grew out of it. Rather abruptly, Rose mumbled. You were there one day and gone the next. William stopped coming too. Harriet clasped her hands in front of her. Good. He was far too old to be playing pretend. As they approached the fallen tree, Harriet stopped, examining the breadth of the trunk. How could a tree of this size have fallen? She stepped on top of it before climbing down to the other side. She extended her hand to Rose, offering to help her over. The place where the roots had once taken hold was covered in vines and leaves. I haven't the slightest idea. Rose grasped Harriet's hand, climbing and then alighting from the trunk with ease. She bent over to brush bits of leaves off the bottom half of her skirts, looping her arm through Harriet's as they continued on the path. A grin tugged at Harriet's lips. I thought you would suggest that a group of ruffians recently escaped from Bedlam capsized the tree in an attempt to trap us the entire day and night in a dark forest. That would have been my first conjecture, but you just claimed imagination to be ridiculous. Rose raised one eyebrow. The steady and unmistakable sound of horse hooves struck the ground in the distance, calling Harriet's eyes over her shoulder. Who might that be? Rose asked, her hazel eyes twinkling in curiosity. One of those ruffians you speak of? Harriet stared at the fallen log, biting her lower lip. We ought to warn the rider of the fallen tree, even if he is a ruffian. She started walking in the direction of the sound, Rose trailing close behind. She stopped several feet behind the log, crossing her arms. Should we wait here until we catch sight of the rider? Rose nodded, squinting past the clearing and into the woods, where the hoofbeats grew louder. He is riding quite quickly. A skilled rider and agile horse would have no problem avoiding the tree, even if it did come upon them unexpectedly. Harriet considered calling out to the distant rider, but doubted her voice would be heard. She moved to the side of the log to ensure she was out of the way if the rider intended to send his horse leaping over it. Her heart pounded with dread. The rider was not slowing down. He would only see the log the moment he came into the clearing, and she suspected his horse would not have time to react. Sir! She called out, as loud as her lungs would allow. She waved her arms in the air, and Rose joined her in the motion. Sir! The warning didn't reach the rider in time. A white horse came bounding through the trees and reared back hard, throwing its rider forcefully to the ground. The man landed near the horse's feet before the creature's back leg struck him in the head with such force that he was thrown onto his back several feet away. Harriet covered her mouth with both hands. The rider lay motionless, still too close to his horse's stamping feet to be safe. Harriet rushed forward without thinking, her muscles sparking with desperation. The man could easily be trampled again. Harriet! Rose's dismayed voice was mingled with a gasp. Heart pounding, Harriet moved first toward the agitated horse, attempting to calm it. Her family owned many fine horses, and while Harriet had not taken a great deal of interest in them growing up, she had seen her father calm them on many occasions. The first step was to remain calm herself. She pressed down her fear as she approached the animal, speaking softly to it as she extended her hand to stroke its side. The horse's coat glistened with sweat, its muscled body fatigued. Eventually its breathing slowed, and it became still. Harriet! The terror in Rose's voice sent a wave of unease through Harriet's stomach. She glanced in the direction of her voice. Rose stood above the fallen rider, her brow drawn together in deep concern. Was he dead? Harriet swallowed hard, leaving the horse's side to assist Rose. She stopped when she saw the man's face as he lay motionless on the ground. His dark auburn hair, dark eyebrows, and solid jaw were all too familiar. Her blood froze, her skin grew cold, and her heart galloped faster than any horse. She could see only his profile, but it was enough to know with certainty the rider's identity. It was William.
"Do you think he's alive?"
Rose's voice was taut, filled with dread.
"Shall I fetch my father to help?"
Harriet fell to her knees in front of him, her hands shaking as she felt for his pulse, brushed her fingers under his nose. A faint heat touched her cold hands, the rustle of air from his lungs. She sighed in relief. What the devil was William doing in Brighton? Harriet had just spoken to his sister Maria 3 days before. Maria had said William would not be returning for 2 weeks. What had compelled him to race through the woods in such an eager manner? She searched his head with her gloved fingertips, looking for the source of the blood that spilled into the dirt and leaves beneath him. Her own head was becoming faint, her stomach a tight ball. Rose kept her distance, trembling.
"I will fetch my father."
Harriet heard her retreating footfalls, heavy and fast. She found the place William's head had been struck, her glove coming away wet with blood. The horse had kicked with enough force to split the skin. She took off her cloak, wadding the fabric and pressing it against the wound. With all of her strength, she turned him over by tucking her hands around his torso. She leaned over him to press her ear to his chest. His heart beat slowly, softly, as if it were almost too weary to continue. His face was white, his breathing shallow. Panic seized in her chest.
"William," she said, "open your eyes. Please, open your eyes."
Her words were not greeted by even a flutter of his eyelids, not even a twitch. She studied his face, pressing the cloak harder against his head as she did. She had once punctured her finger with a needle, and her father had told her to apply pressure to the wound.
"Please wake up, William."
Since her last day at the beach, she had not seen him in such close proximity. She had been avoiding it for so long. But now, with no choice in the matter, she noted all the things that had changed. His freckles had faded, his skin smooth, except around his mouth and jaw, where faint dark stubble grew. His hair was a deeper red than it had once been, almost brown. His features were no longer youthful, but firm and masculine, his cheek and brow bones prominent, his eyes deep set. She wished he would open them. She glanced behind her, desperation clawing at her composure. Rose needed to return soon. Turning her gaze back to William, Harriet thought of another day, a much happier one, when he had looked very much the same, only much younger and much less pale and bloodied. Chapter 2. 10 years before.
"William, open your eyes."
Harriet shook his shoulder, giggling between her words.
"I know you are not sleeping."
Sand mingled with his hair, which appeared almost the same colour of the sunset behind the ocean. His eyelids twitched. So did the corners of his mouth.
"I saw that," she said,
her eyes narrowing down at his face. She poked his cheek, sitting back on her heels.
"If you are truly sleeping, then you will not care if I pour water on your face, will you?"
She stood up, taking tentative steps toward the sea, the water lapping over the sand. She stepped in, just far enough to reach her ankles. Cupping her hands, she scooped up the salty water, hurrying back to William's side as it leaked through her fingers.
"I will give you to the count of three to open your eyes, or I will drop this water on your face."
Harriet tried to keep her voice stern, but she could not help but smile.
"One, two."
William's mouth had slipped into a wide grin, his eyes still closed. His body shook with laughter. Three! Harriet opened her hands, letting the water fall over his grinning face. He sputtered into laughter, sitting up and wiping the water from his hair and eyes.
Thank you, he said, his voice strained as he blinked rapidly against the salty water. That was quite refreshing.
Harriet turned around, exchanging an exasperated look with Grace and Rose, who stood watching with giggles of their own. William's green eyes danced with amusement.
We did not finish our game, Harriet said, brushing sand from her skirts as she stood.
She did not care to hear another of his explanations about how he loved the sea and the water and being splashed in the face, and how it was nothing of a true punishment, although she knew his mamma would never let him get in the sea. He knew as little about swimming as Harriet did.
You mustn't fall asleep until we are finished.
She pulled him to his feet.
You cannot keep your place as captain of our ship if you insist on sleeping. Who will steer us to safety?
You are the quartermaster. The duty would fall to you.
William's dripping hair fell over his brow, a smirk twisting his lips. Harriet considered his words, tapping her chin. She, the captain.
Very well, then you may go back to sleep.
She hurried over to her sister and Rose, raising her hand in the air.
I sense a storm coming. Back to your positions.
Gripping the imaginary wheel, she turned the ship away from the fearsome oncoming waves.
Unacceptable. William stepped forward. I am the captain, and I'm feeling quite refreshed from the water that my quartermaster so willingly deposited on my head. I will take the ship from here.
You abandoned your crew.
Harriet raised her chin.
Their loyalty belongs to me now.
Rose shook her head, speaking in a whisper, as if a louder voice would disrupt the charade they were performing.
No, I am still quite loyal to Captain William. He is much better at playing captain.
Harriet gasped when her sister nodded in agreement.
We vote to allow Captain William a pardon, just this once,
Grace exclaimed, raising her own fist in the air. Harriet stepped grudgingly aside, allowing William to take the invisible wheel. He grinned in triumph, but his smile softened when he saw Harriet's disappointment.
You may be captain if you really wish to be, Harriet.
His voice was a whisper in her ear, low enough to evade Rose and Grace's attention.
I could pretend to be injured.
Her anger faded the moment he used that voice on her, the sweet, considerate, and kind one. Her anger always mounted at his mischievous smirks and triumphant voices, but he could quickly put out the flame within seconds.
No, the crew has spoken.
She stepped away from him, coming to a stop beside her sister. He quirked an eyebrow in her direction, curiosity in his gaze. He seemed to still be examining her, searching for any sign of her unrest. Harriet knew he was never content when she wasn't.
Well, he said, this is my ship, so I do not require a pardon from you scurvy rascals.
Half his mouth lifted in a smile as he pretended to whip the wheel toward the oncoming waves.
Together we will weather the storm.
Huzzah!
The three girls shouted. Harriet laughed at the mad motions William made as he pretended to steer the ship away from danger. She pretended to be tossed to and fro along the planks of their ship, her half-boots filling with sand and smooth pebbles.
Do you see that?
William pointed ahead at the ocean. With her eyes, Harriet saw nothing but a calm sea and fading horizon. But her imagination saw much more. She imagined the writhing tentacles of a sea creature rising above the waves and wriggling toward their ship, the suckers moving to pull them into the depths of the stormy sea.
Has Arabella returned again?
Harriet ran up beside him, pretending to look through a telescope.
Indeed she has. The monster has not finished with us. Prepare for battle.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?